WCKUD, CKUD 90.3 FM.
It's summertime. Time to hit the road. Hit that Trans-Canada Highway. Past the nation's capital, past the sleepy cows, and into the peaceful pastures of Wakefield, Quebec. For the first time ever, Swoney Peril Popolo presents a day of revelatory offerings in an historic farmhouse, Fairburn House, bordering the Gatineau River in Wakefield. Saturday, June 25th, music begins at 3:30 p.m. On the bill, Swoney Heartstoppers Esmarine, Willie Mitchell, Nada Al-Shazly, and Eliza Caution. For tickets, directions, camping, and all the 411, go to SwoneyPerilPopolo.org. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Welcome to this June episode of Pirate Block Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM, a show on new media and digital arts coming out of Jejage, also known as Montreal, located on unceded Indigenous lands. I'm Malte Leander, guiding you through discussions on these topics and much more with local artists and creators. Today, we have two guests lined up that both explore the intersections between technology and ecology. First up is Chilean artist and educator Cristo Rifo, focusing his practice on a wide range of technologies and techniques, more recently through research in bioart and microbiology. Hey, Cristo, good to have you here today. How's it going?
Hi, Malte. It's going great. Really excited being here on the radio. And also, side note, really excited to be here in Montreal. This is my 8th month here, so pretty excited, especially because of the summer. Crazy weather.
Exactly. Yeah, the first one for you. Hopefully, yes. first of many. We'll see where that path leads.
Exactly. Hoping the same thing.
So I did a short introduction here on some of the more recent topics that you're exploring in your work. And it seems to be a new one, perhaps, for you, or a new direction. So I'm curious to hear what sparked your interest in exploring this, jumping into the task of using a microscope without prior experience with this equipment.
Well, it's. I think it's been quite a journey. As I was talking with you before starting the show, recently I kind of revisit a lot of my past works. And when you do that, you kind of try to figure out your own path. I think it's not that I was immediately interested in microbiology. I mean, it's fascinating, but in a weird way, I went through that rabbit hole with the studies of politics. And it's a weird relationship, but like studying politics and working with political art, that I think is my main practice for the past 10 years, I encountered with cybernetics, that is a discipline from the 50s that went out into the 80s, kind of, like give or take. And when I ran into cybernetics, because I was studying a certain period in Salvador Allende's presidency, this is the president, socialist president in Chile in the 70s, I encountered a project called Project CyberSyn that in the recent years has been getting a lot of traction from different like scholars and intellectuals in art scenes. And I read this paper from a PhD student from MIT. I think at that point she wasn't a student, but she was a graduate, called Ede Medina, and she did this research about this period. And through the CyberSyn project, I kind of went into cybernetics, and then I encountered like the subject that is basically the relationship between machines and animals, and they understand animals as everything that is biological. So in a way, I kind of naturally derived through the microscopic like lenses, you know?
Yeah, that's quite a direct linkage between technology and biology or ecology or using that very lens to sort of better be in contact with that world, I guess. But I understand that you're combining microscopy with both robotics and artificial intelligence, at least further down the line, with the project that you're currently undertaking. How does the combination of these fields look like?
Well, I think to answer that, I can go further a bit in the last iteration that I was saying relating to the CyberSync project, because there's this, so the creator of the project, it's a cybernetist called Strafford Beer, and he's like the father of management cybernetics, that is a branch of cybernetics related to the management of institutions, of companies, or any kind of entity, because he understands social entities as living things. So he makes a relationship between living things and society. And what I want to do, because I'm studying organisms with the microscope, at this point, I'm trying to find relationships between masses of people, like manifesting in the streets or moving in public spaces, and how the microorganisms organize themselves. Because if you think about it, like, the microorganisms are older than us. They have been here for millions and millions of years, and we come from them. So, and this is one of the principal, like, cybernetic ideas, that there's common knowledge between disciplines, and we all came from the same thing, that is molecules organizing themselves into cells, and cells evolving into more complex beings until we are here on Earth. So I think that studying microorganisms is kind of a political subject and also a philosophical endeavor, because you're investigating life kind of before life as we understand consciousness and other things. And every time that I see like the microorganisms, I kind of see them as simple phrases of life. It's like a simple line of code that is repeating itself all the time. So I feel like, because I want to include, as I was saying, artificial intelligence, but I think it's like two mirrors that are looking each other, you know, because the microorganisms also are like lines of code. And then I put on top of that molecular lines of code, I put like digital lines of code. And what I want to do in the future, I mean, this project is just starting to take on, and I would love to work with someone, a specialist in artificial intelligence, to try to teach and train an artificial intelligence using as an inspiration or as a base, if you want, the viable system, that is the system that Strafford Beer created to organize companies and entities. And the thing about the viable system is that it's based on the nervous systems of biological beings. So it's like understanding that society, it's a living being that must be taken care of. And I'm trying to do this connection between, I think that's the political part of the piece, like understanding how complicated and so delicate is to maintain life in a prosperous way.
Right. I like the way that you phrase these sort of the life before life itself, or it's interesting, this framework that we're all based upon or coming from. Something that's been around for millions of years, or looking at these ecosystems that exist on such a small scale. This comparison, or the differences between the micro and the macro, and the contrast that you try to explore, I find particularly fascinating, this contrast between the two. What can you say more about these varying lenses or degrees of sizes or different parts of the spectrum, I guess?
I think it's a really, as I was saying, like a philosophical endeavor in the size, in the aspect of epistemology. Like, this is how we perceive reality and interpret reality and how reality responds to that interpretation. And I remember the first time that I was seeing through the microscope lens, and I felt so privileged in a way and so like alienated to this reality. Privileged because I felt like I was the only person in the entire planet that I was seeing this. And that's true, because I'm the only one that's putting his eyes in these like spaceships that are the magnifying glasses, and I traveled to this universe and I saw this drama, because it's like a cosmic drama that is happening all the time. It's, they're dying, they're eating each other, they're reproducing itself, they're like doing all these complex things, they're fighting for their lives, they're moving everywhere, and they have like these really complex structures that are, you don't, this is something from another planet, but it comes from this planet. And then you see these interactions, and you see, as I was saying, this cosmic drama, and you feel like you are connected to them in a really simple way, but at the same time, you are in another dimension. Like, you cannot even touch them because your finger is like, you put your finger and it's just a shadow, it's enormous. You put the tip of how you call this? This, when you saw a pant, una aguja, a needle.
Right, the top of a needle, or like
You put it. You cannot touch them because they're another dimension. Liquid behaves as not liquid, it behaves like something solid. So they can like fly. It's like they're flying in the liquid. It's a completely different universe. And it makes you think, it makes you reflect. There's so many things happening at the same time. Ethics also, because you kind of see the life there, but you're in charge of their lives because you have them in these small recipients. It's just, it's not, I want to make clear to the people that are hearing this, it's not like anything special what I see. You just take pond water. You take dirty water from a tree and it's crawling with life. There's thousands of things there. Mm-hmm. And the beings that are there are incredibly complex. Right. And yeah.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how very close and up front it becomes, and still so distant, as you say, and at the same time you can't really interact with it because of the differences in size. Well, and all of these studies that you do and sort of focusing in on this topic that is part of an ongoing work and research, titled Constellations, a Cybernetic Study of the Microcosmos. Can you talk a little bit about the title of this work or how that came to be?
So Constellations, it's a wordplay between the relationship of the immenseness of the cosmos and the universe and the constellations that are inside it and the microorganisms. And for me, there's a relationship also between human bodies as constellations by itself. Just to tell you something, there's a microorganism, like a species called nematodes, that are basically worms. And I learned that because I've seen nematodes, they're amazing, they're spectacular and kind of disgusting when you really look at them, you know, because they're worms, sometimes move faster, some of them are gigantic in the microscopic scale, of course. And I learned that inside our body, we have billions of them, billions. There's billions of nematodes that compose our body. So our body itself, it's a constellation. And then when you have masses of bodies, it's a constellation over a constellation. So this relationship and this way of perceiving things, it's cybernetic if you decide to go that way. And that I do. I love the topic. If the people are listening to now cybernetics, Google it, because it's really amazing. And there's something in the installation, as I want to propose it, in which I want to face these two realities, the realities of human beings in masses doing something in the city, because the city itself also is an organism. It's like a mamushka, you know, it's like a doll inside a doll inside a doll inside a doll inside a doll.
Right.
And And this is like every time that I start to go in this way, you cannot get this kind of anxiousness because it's really there. And you want to also like scream to the people, like, do you know this? You know, like, so I think in a way, what I want to do with this piece and with this investigation is just to face public with this thing that is evident, but you kind of want to ignore it all the time. But I think through art, you can do in this kind of connections in a beautiful way and in a way that makes you think. And I think that's why I'm trying to do the same thing, you know, like on top of the algorithms that are the biological algorithms that are the beings in the microcosmos, I want to put robotics, as you were saying, because I want to move the microscope with motors and gadgets. And then on top of that, I want to put the artificial intelligence to manage how the organisms are being fed, how the temperature is for them, how the movement of the light is over the organisms. So I want to try to nurture them using ideas from the past, because this is something that I really believe that because we live right now in a kind of apocalyptic future, we are just expecting the worst. And I think there's so many ideas from the past that could be used in the present and in the future. And one of those ideas is cybernetic, because this idea is an idea to understand technology and nature outside the spectrum of capitalism. It's not thought as an extractivism. It's thought more as a universal idea to comprehend reality. And I think I want to, with this, that's why I want to quote cybernetics in the piece, because I want to bring ideas from the past for the future. And I want to make this kind of gesture to incentivize the public to research it, because I think there's so many good ideas from the past that kind of die out. But it's not because the idea was bad, it's because it was lacking funding. And funding, you know, it's not always related to quality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and bringing in robotics, I think, is just yet another like interesting layer of scale, both the timely scale leaning towards the future and whatever you're seeing in the microscope tracing back, as you said, millions of years. So it is a prolonged timeline, which I think is really interesting to think about and have as a crossroads or a meeting point in this installation and in whatever direction it will take next. Another potential path forward past this stage also seemed to be the possibility of developing perhaps educational material linked to this project, or further tapping into your previous experience with teaching, developing workshops and other content. Could you speak a little bit about this side to the project?
Well, that's something that I kind of do with every investigation that I do, because I really enjoy that you present me as an educator, because I consider myself one. I've been teaching for the past 10 years to different ages, from kids, teenagers, and adults. And I think in every stage of human like development, like when you're a kid and where you're a teenager and where you're an adult, there's something that is always, I think, must be sparked by the educator, that is curiosity. And for me, doing art is related 100% to that. That's why in my practice, if you search my name and you see my different works, I see a connection. There's this conceptual connections, but technically they're all over the place. Like you see works with chemistry, you see works with microbiology, with light, with old machines, with film projectors. You know, this like accumulation of different techniques. And I feel like there's like a subproduct of art research, that is that you learn new fields and you learn them like from, as an outsider. So you learn it as an artist or as a philosopher, if you are, or different like disciplines that are far away from the discipline itself. And in that specific way of approaching something, you can see like contents to create educational processes that I found really interesting. So for the past 3 months, as you know, I've been working in Eastern Bloc and developing a biolab station. And one of my main objectives while I was working on that is to create educational content that can be teach with the microscope as a tool. And this content, as an excuse, is microbiology, because we're going to learn about microbiology, because I have learned about microbiology. And this is the interesting part, as I was saying, like the subproduct of research in art is that you actually learn from other disciplines that maybe you wouldn't would learn in your normal life, as, I don't know, like if you just dedicate to one practice. Like if I in the past I was a painter, so if I stay painting, it's hard to like learn techniques from other disciplines. But as a new media artist, you kind of do this widespread of different knowledges. And when I was learning microbiology, I learned it from scratch. I didn't know anything. So I was really surprised with everything that I learned. And this kind of amazingness that you feel when you're learning something, when I feel it specifically, I just want to transmit it. And I think that's why it's kind of the process for me, from artist to educator, is kind of natural, because for me, both are kind of connected. Everyone interprets the meaning of art as they want. And of course, some people want to be more abstract or more cryptic. On my field, I really want to transmit ideas. And this is one of the ways that I confront the art practice, and as I confront my vision as an educator. So I think both things I kind of related, you know, the research as an artist and then the knowledge as an educator. And there's so many things that I learned in the process. You know, like I learned how cells behave. I learned what the names of certain organisms are, where you can find them. For example, I have certain recipients, and in this recipient I have nematodes, and in these other ones I have rotifers. You saw the rotifers, and like I put a drop of water, put the rotifer, and explain the parts, and it's just fascinating, because there's some, like when you learn something, you know, you learn that you know nothing, and you want to learn more. Like every time that I see, for example, a rotifer, I imagine how many genes do we share with him? Because there's things that maybe are in our vowels or maybe are in a vocal cord. Like remember the mouth that they have? The other day I saw an image of a vocal cord and they were exactly the same. I'm not saying that they are, because I don't know, but it's just, I'm saying that the curiosity that this brings is like infinite. And I think the curiosity aspect is the thing that I want to share when I learn something.
That's very nice. I think curiosity is definitely something that I can relate to, and that I believe, you know, feeds a lot of paths forward and initiatives, most definitely. Well, speaking of curiosity, perhaps, you started off by telling us that you quite recently went through a large transition of moving from Chile to now residing here in Montreal, partly out of curiosity. But I'm curious to hear how that move and shift of environment has perhaps affected your practice, and in what ways that has been taking shape since.
Well, I definitely must say that it bring me to a different timeline in the sense of how I perceive time. I think things here are slower, especially because in the past 3 years, we have been living a really agitated political and economical situation in Chile with the popular protest of 2019. So with the writing of the new constitution, the constant protests, like every Friday on Plaza de la Dignidad protesting, you know, like this kind of took a toll on me. And now I kind of understand what that toll is, you know, because it generates so much stress, like in the body and in the mind. But at the same time, it creates this sense of excitement. And I would say, you know what I've been thinking lately, and because of this transition, I've been thinking so much about utopias, you know, because we in Chile, we have a history with utopia. In the constant search for utopias, I believe in them. And I think that it's so important to believe in them, you know. And well, next thing with the other subject, cybernetics is also an utopical field. It's utopical because they want to understand everything and they want to connect everything. You know, they don't want to go put the money in just one thing. They want to put the money in everything because they want to understand reality. And I must say, because in Chile now we're living a historical process because we are rewriting our constitution, and we are rewriting it in a way that was never before done, because we always have powerful people that close the doors and they write it how we should live. And now after the revolution, through the popular protests, we put pressure into the government to say, okay, we want the new constitution, we voted for it, and now it's happening, you know, and we're full of dreams, you know, like it's like so much illusion, but at the same time, there's an obscure force that is also like multiplying. So it's like a constant battle, you know, and it makes you think like, what is the right thing to do, you know? And I think the distance, that's my point, the distance kind of makes me, it's more slow, because I think to understand things that are so intense, you need slowness. And at the same time, while I watch my microorganisms, you know, they make me think about this, you know, in a way that is, right now, I think I don't have the words to connect them. I think I kind of hint the idea, that's why I want to work with the viral system of Stratford. I didn't say before, but the viral system is really uncentralized, hierarchical, way of understanding organizations. So it's based, it's not anarchist, because Stratford wasn't an anarchist, but it's close to it. You know, it's another way of organizing things. And I think that's why the idea to connect these two things was born, you know. And here's the thing, and I think because I haven't done it, but I think the result, it's not going to be as favorable as I think. Maybe they all die. Maybe I only help one part of the microcosmos and the other part decreases. You know, like there's so many questions. And I only know that it's important to search for utopias, even if they're unreal, because they move human society forward. You know, we move human rights, we move social movements, we move rights in a way that is positive, even though if we dreaming them is earlier than doing them. You know, that's why it's important to have like a North Star to follow. And I think utopias are that.
I think that's a very neat way of linking in all of different time scales and scales of the different entities and ecologies that you're focusing on in this practice and in the project that you're undertaking. And also probably a good point actually to stop our conversation today, but I want to thank you, Christo, for sharing some insight upon your thoughts and processes around this, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it develops and what comes out on the other side.
Malte, thank you so much for the questions. You know, when sometimes you have all of the things in your inside, like, and then someone asks the questions and then you like move them with a stick. I feel like that is what happened. And I'm really glad, because I kind of understood things about my practice just talking with you. And I hope that the program keeps going and you have more interesting guests. And I'm looking forward to see next seasons.
Well, that's great, Christo. Thank you so much. Well, take care, and I'll see you around soon.
You too. Bye, man.
Next up on today's episode, I get to talk to Olivier Landry-Gagnon, an interdisciplinary artist with a particular interest for sound and music, with a wide array of experiences in composing for other mediums and art forms, for theater, dance, and performance, as well as for various visual arts and installation works. Merging his sound practice with a technical orientation, this results often in DIY electronic music devices, incorporating sensors or other interactive elements. Thank you, Olivier, for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I'm super busy right now.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to sit down for a moment.
Yeah, of course. Then. It's part of the business of my things.
Perfect. Well, so Olivier, over the past few months, you've been steadily working away on on an artist residency at Eastern Bloc, and more specifically on a project titled Oscillum, exploring the interaction between the oscilloscope and the modular synthesizer. Could you explain a little bit about what it is that interests you in the meeting of these two pieces of equipment?
I would probably add another aspect of this project. It's the movement. So I've been working a lot in different art projects, like you said, in performance and things like that. But dance was something that really make me like, there was a little spark inside me when I at first play with dance, live music with dance. So this project, it's really about voltage and human movements and nature of the movement. So I like to use analog oscilloscope because there's like this cathodic response of it, really structure the sound of those instruments. So like the flexibility that came both together, it's like super, I don't know how to, you really have to see it to feel it, but it's a feeling more than like a super technologic thing, you know? That's where I feel the nature of the electricity in that collaboration. That's how I see it. It's like a collaboration of electricity and music, because this is my main tool, music. So I'm doing an installation that with the movement and infrared system that I create at Eastern Bloc, I create a way to move in the space and play with the sound of the oscilloscope. And then I want to create like, it's, let's say, a technologic theater, like it's more than an installation, but it's going to be performed. So yeah, there's this link. I don't know what is mise en scène, but I want to put in scene
put into the light or like show that connection.
Yeah, but more in the theatrical aspect of it. So yeah, I've been exploring and creating some modules and that infrared system, been digging a lot of that. And then yeah, I'm now with with three oscilloscope partner.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a fascinating sort of crossover of the different senses, right? Of the oscilloscope being able to visually represent frequencies and wave tables and sounds in that way, and then sort of translating that into movement.
Yeah.
How is that being done? I mean, going from sound or a visual representation and the linkage to movement that you mentioned being sort of the third important aspect in the project. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship?
Yeah. At first I was using like a really, it was the Coma Commander. It's like a little infrared system that you can put your hand on. And my biggest problem with that, it was that I just had 5 centimeters of distance, which was kind of, it says table dense, you know? But I wanted to have like a corporeal, the body can play the music and you can see how the body can affect the sound you hear and how you can see it. So yeah, this was the biggest thing I wanted to explore in that project. And yeah, with the system I've built, it's now you have 10 feet of distance, so you can really feel like a dance approach. It's like a ballet or a valse. You can really move in the space with those instruments. And I put those oscilloscope on some wheels, so then you can move the structure and play with them and put it into the space and create your own space with the sounds and which sounds come from where. So it's like it's really about an ecosystem, a collaboration, all the cables for me, it's like a representation of the mycelium, like the réseau of mushrooms that normally it's hiding in the ground, so we cannot see it. But in that project, I wanted to explore how we can see the cable and see the connection and why there's this collaboration. It's because their connection are made and are thinked about it. But afterward, I wanted to be able to connect those things, but be able to improvise into that ecosystem, because this is my main thing. It's improvisation. I want to be able to create on the spot something new and be surprised about what's happening, and not necessarily be in control of it, but be able to manage it and play with it, not just be afraid of, we don't know, of the chaos, you know. It's like a smooth chaos.
Exactly.
I'm digging it, you know.
Digging and at the same time digging up the roots or the mycelium, the cable yeah. being shown. I like that. Just that choice of exposing what's going on inside, mm-hmm. and sort of, it is easier, or I find it to be easy to understand that connection of crossing different ecologies or ecosystems, as you said, showcasing both what happens inside and then the interaction then between this module or device that is moving yeah. together with the human.
Yeah, because we're now in the world that almost everything's in the computer, you know, so we see there's a screen, but afterward we don't see what's there, you know. It's just cool to plug a cable and see that it affects the real time, the real life on the spot. Yeah, this is something that I wanted to show. And it's part of the installation, the cables and the cabling managing and everything. This is part of the installation. I want to show it.
Right. I definitely feel that these words of ecologies and ecosystem really sort of comes to mind. And that's also one way that this project has been described by you, that the interactions between mm-hmm. electronic equipment, sound arts, and performance. You've described it as a charged ecosystem that unites human and electricity, where these areas meet. What I found particularly interesting is the sort of the change of space that happens when mm-hmm. these interactions are happening, with the sort of unpredictability of the human and then the electronic device that move on its own, and how that changes the space. Can you talk a little bit more on this overlapping of worlds and of movement, perhaps, and how it changes yeah. the space, I guess?
Mm-hmm. But for me, electricity at first, it's nature. So for me, it makes a lot of sense that humans take it in their own hands and be a, I don't know, I talk a lot about collaboration. I'm more using those instruments, like modular synthesizer, as a collaborator than my instrument, you know? So I put some ideas in there, and then there's something that comes there, and this is the space and time, you know? So we have to be aware and listening to it. This is the first part of music, listening. So for me, it's the present moment is really like, this is a human part and this is an electricity part. And that's how they come together. And then the thing happens and you have to float on it. I think this is how the ecosystem is creating. It's created, yeah.
Yeah, and then the actual space on stage, or the choreography, is in itself there, I guess, unpredictable. Or how are those exchanges happening? Is the device itself being controlled during a live performance with the modular synthesizer, so the input is sort of controlling the direction that it's moving in, or how
is... it's with the infrared system that I've built. So you have like a little what is a manet? Sorry.
Yeah, like a controller.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little controller that you have in your hand without wire. So with distance, you can control one of the structure. So every structure has its proper synthesizer that I've built that has its proper sound. And I try to find different characteristics to each structure. So smaller sound, more high frequencies, and this give you another thing on the screen for sure. So I want to do a polyphonic thing. So you have all those structure, all those elements. It's like different, let's say, mono synthesizer, and then create this orchestral thing that is visual in the space, and that the person inside this ecosystem trig or not. So if there's no one, there's no sound, and if there's no sound, there's no visual, and if there's no person, the structure will stay there because there's no motor there. So you have to take your hand and move it yourself. So for me, that's how the ecosystem is built. You need everyone.
Exactly. I know the collaboration can only happen with multiple multiple entities for it to start to.
And I want to be an S. This is like a super large scale project. So at Eastern Bloc, I really dig into the technologic aspect that I had in mind, and that was really hard to tell to some people just with words. So now I have some pictures, some videos, some. There's different step in that project. So this was the technologic steps. And I have another, the movement steps with that I want to, let's say, work with choreographer, maybe, probably, but maybe just people that are good in their movement and aware of things. So it can be really subtle. And there's another step, which is more like with theater. I'm working with Valérie Drapeau, which is a metteur en scène, and we want to make more a theatrical show with that. So this is going to be another step. So right now, what I'm going to show at Eastern Bloc is more like, let's say, a song. So I will write a song with those, let's say,
devices,
those collaborator. And it's going to be more a small scale presentation, but we're gonna feel the like how we can, how the person, the performer can affect the sound and in the space. We're gonna feel that, but yeah, I'm not, this is not a finished project.
No, I can tell, but it's a development of a tool set almost, because it sounds to me like it would be applicable, and as you're saying, in theater or in other contexts where that could fit the theme or the topic that is being talked about, more than just being an artwork in itself, which it could also be, but more of a tool or piece of equipment that is applicable.
More like that, yeah. And I really needed that time to create that, because it has to be made for that project, you know. So I was looking for structure and trying to buy some structure, and I finally decided to add some like a soldering course. So I built myself the structure, and I was like, this is how I can have my idea. It's just to build it for this. And same thing for the modular synthesizer. I bought some PCBs, and then I just solder nonstop to create the synthesizer that is needed for that project and for that oscilloscope. So yeah, it's been a lot of works, and that time was needed to achieve what I had in mind. And yeah, it happens.
That's great. Yeah, no, it takes a lot of time, a bit more time than buying an already set framework, but it is also very, very rewarding. And as you're saying, you're getting it the way that you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, as I mentioned earlier here in your introduction, you have plenty of other experience in making sound for performances and shows of different kinds. And then often including modular synthesizers. Yeah. Is this project a first one, the combination of exploring the interaction between the human and robotics in choreography, or how has that looked in your previous
I've been working
project?
With, yeah, it's not the first one. Let's say it's the larger scale one, but I've been using I've been using modular synthesizer for almost 8 years. So this is my main instrument. And I've been exploring some servo motors and things like that with one of my mentors, which is Stéphane Boucher, that I've learned a lot from him because we both have like a, let's say, a pop music instinct, but still, yeah, it's not... We like to sing some songs, but at the same time, we like when there's a part in the song that is like just something else that you didn't know it will happen and you never probably hear. So we explore a lot with motors and video, glitch, analog video in relation with synthesizers. So we have some module that can do CV to motors. So a modulation can move the motor. So it's really in sync. There's no computer there. It's like super, super there.
Yeah, very hands-on to get the input into the output and the other way
exactly.
around.
Exactly. And there's like a response in there that I cannot find anywhere else. So yeah, we've tried a lot of motors with that, with some puppet that we put some music in that in those modules, and then the puppet was dancing from the sounds.
Oh, that's great.
So this was my first experience with synth and motors. I've also did a video called D'une nature électrique, which was using a servo motor also, but lights. So one of my friends, we modify like a really old mixer, light mixer, that can receive some CVs. So the lights are controlled by the modular synthesizer too. So music can be mute and you can still control the lights. So for me, modular synthesizer, it's more seamless than a human.
Exactly. I was about to say that tool of controlling these different elements also ties into what we talked earlier about some of the themes of ecologies and ecosystems due mm-hmm. to the imperfections or the randomness that can be achieved
exactly.
through the modular mm-hmm. systems, and that sort of links into the randomness and the imperfections of nature and the natural world. So I think
and then no preset too. There's this aspect too of you have to be concentrated because you cannot press preset 21 and then your song's there. You know, you have to be there sometime. Yeah, for me, it's part of the performance to be vulnerable a little bit. So there's a performance aspect in there that thrills me a lot. Mm-hmm. And some people will be afraid of that, but I'm like, oh, I like that. I want more.
Yeah, no, that leaves a lot of parameters out of control sometimes, but I mean, at the same time, it leaves a lot of freedom and a lot of space to improvise with this type of equipment and technology.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's kind of the first technology that we had in hand. So for me, it's just the cycle of it, you know. So it's, we're coming back to ecosystem and things like and hurt the cycle of life, you know. But it's right. it's there.
Well, so we talked a little bit about the DIY approach, and this project that we've talked about today certainly taps into that sort of merging different equipments. So what is it in your practice in particular, in general, what do you like about this merging of uses of equipment and devices, or the DIY aspect to it all?
I really like to recycle thing in life. So I have a lot of things that right now are not, they're not into a project right now, but I like to find things that just object that inspire me. So for me, DIY, it's not just for electronic. It's also for boxes, for, let's say, I'm just always into that research and finding how I can modify things to be exactly what I wanted. And it's rare that I buy things like new stuff. I like to recycle things, and then it comes to an idea. And this idea is, I like this aspect of that, of singularity, and that's how the character of the things happens. And yeah, just using her hands to create things, for me, it's super necessary in to those years, you know. For me, soldering, like I said, the structure was super used the hot, I don't know, it's so hot that your metal's melting. Mm-hmm. It's something just so crazy for me. And then you can build from that. It's this is awesome. Yeah. So yeah, DIY, it's really a big part of my life, not just in my heart.
Yeah, interlinking different areas of usage, and as you said, just making new life out of ordinary things that can then be recontextualized into artistic practice or in exactly. Some other ways.
Yeah, and it's always around us. I'm a big fan of rust, and for me, rust, it's at first nature, but it's there. But you have to zoom in or just be aware of it, but it's all around, and people paint rust, but sometimes it's like artwork.
Exactly.
So yes, this is a big part of my life. Yeah.
Well, Olivier, it was great to hear you talk about all of this, and specifically about Oscillum, the project that you've been diving deep into on the technical parts, at least so far. So I'm very curious to see what comes out on the other side, or in what other context that we can see these devices. So good luck with the path forward on continuing to develop that project.
Yeah, thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thank you, Olivier. And for all of you listeners out there, Olivier's work is also one of the artists that are part of the upcoming residency showcase series called Spotlight, happening during 3 consecutive weekends in June, where Olivier's work will be able to be seen on June 18th at Eastern Bloc. So if not before, I will see you there, Olivier. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot.
And that, dear listeners, is all from today's episode of Pirate Block Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM. The discussion you just heard was together with Olivier Landry-Gagnon, and before that, a conversation with Christo Riffo. keep your fingers on the pulse of Eastern Bloc, because as I just mentioned, there are three consecutive Saturdays coming up in June, the 11th, 18th, and 25th of June, where we are showcasing past and present artists and residents and their work in progress and completed works that have been done at the center recently. So come through and check all of Eastern Bloc's social media channels for more information. I will get back to you at the same time, same place next month. That is the first Thursday of the month between 8 and 9 p.m. See you soon.
My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines. On Sunday, racing driver Max Verstappen defeated Carlos Sainz and won the Canadian Grand Prix. This is part of the Formula One World Championship and took place at Montreal's Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. And last week, the federal government lifted its COVID-19 vaccination mandate for domestic travel by plane or train, as well as for international departure flights. Mask wearing is still mandatory on board trains, planes, and ships. And some Quebec high schools will start training students on how to administer naloxone nasally. This drug is used to temporarily counteract opioid overdoses. Select high schools in Ontario, Alberta, and British Columbia will also receive the training before it's expanded nationwide.
Music and anti-fascism, reflections on the past and possibilities in the present. Join us for a concert July 7th featuring Egyptian Cotton Orchestra, Montreal Free Jazz, Kim Dong Wong, free improv based on Korean traditional music, Skunk Heaven, New York City Noise, on July 7th, 2022, at 9 p.m., La Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint Laurent. For more information on the concert and conference on protest music and anti-fascism, music and antifascism.wordpress.com. This concert, with generous support from Suoni per il Popolo and Popolo Press. This is a CKUT Radio co-presentation.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gaila Kasla. My name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlawitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Windle, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Jason Whitebear is one of our youngest panelists. He is a residential school survivor.
Gaki Waku Maganak, Nadi, Mwendin Naganag. How Matakiwas. I said all my relations in three different languages. Those languages were taken away and given with this one here that I've mastered in residential school. And they told me that once you go there, he says, you're not going to come home with this anymore. You're not going to come home being able to speak Nehewiwen. You're not going to be able to speak. But when you do go, what I want you to do is I want you to try and master everything that they give you so that they can never fool us anymore. In my generation, we're at the point now where we understand the nuances between the languages. We can say, bonjour, Anin. I wish I knew a little bit of Arab, but you know, the point being is that we're all sitting around here and we're very learned people. We're very knowledgeable. We know how to say, to say a little bit of each other's language nowadays. And that's just us as this language. And I think that's a direct result of residential school, is because we always ask each other, where are you from? Well, how do you say this? How do you say that? So that when you run into somebody else, you're allowed to respect them and say, Tansi, how? Wuju Anin. So regardless of what was taken away from me during my residential school formative years, I haven't lost the ability to see. And so it is with this that I thank each and every one of you. I'd like to say, and that's Cree for I'm grateful for everything in this land. I had to learn that from a kukum, because I was speaking in front of chiefs one time and I said, I can't speak the language. So she taught me that little bit. Thank you.
You have just heard At Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.